Houston's community station.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
By Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT, 90.1 FM, here in Houston, or kpft.org on the internet, all the way out to the space station. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips in worlds of enchantment, on encounters with the probabilities of reality and changing surfaces below your feet that require you to reestablish yourself before returning us safely to the present. Last week, Hank Rubicek, our producer and the creator of the show, hosted several students from Meyerland Visual and Performing Arts Middle School. Fun and heartwarming stories from the heart. With this show, I am also bringing stories from the heart. They are a little different from last week. My guests this week are two people who were faced with unexpected diagnoses of cancer. Don't be afraid. Don't turn off this dial. These are beautiful stories, and you will feel so enriched listening to them. I have two wonderful guests for our storytelling hour today, Tom Hargrove and Catherine Reppold. Tom is self-employed. He's in real estate, and Catherine is a banker. Both have been treated for cancer, and I asked if they would kindly share the stories of their journeys with us. So, Tom, let's start with you.
All right. Well, Mary, thanks, first of all, for this opportunity. I feel like just blessed as can be to be able to be on your show and to share my story. 4 years ago, at the age of 49 years old, I had some problems going to the restroom, thought I had a UTI, went to my regular doctor. He said, yeah, you probably have a UTI, started treating me for that. A couple of months later, it was not getting better. It was actually getting worse. Went back to him and said, something's going on. He said, let's do some blood work. We did some blood work. My PSA was 200 when it was supposed to be, 2 point something or 3 point something. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to go see a urologist. Sent me to a man I'd never met before. A urologist, had zero bedside manner. Did an exam, turned around, and he said, you have cancer, and you have cancer pretty bad. And I looked around the room going, who are you talking to? And he said, you. I was in shock. I was angry, and just kind of stormed out of there. Luckily, I knew a gentleman, Ron, who had cancer, prostate cancer, a couple years earlier than me. I'd heard his story. I called him up. I said, Ron, I know you went to MD Anderson. I need some help at MD Anderson. And he gave me Mary's number. And we hit it off from the start. And within literally 24 hours, I was getting info from MD Anderson. Happened to be the same day that my middle child was graduating from high school. I sat in the parking lot at the Barry Center while she was graduating, and was getting all my appointments from MD Anderson. Came in when my wife texted me and said she was walking, and got to see her walk across, and hit the ground running the next day at MD Anderson. It's been an amazing journey there. I've met a lot of incredible people, including my doctors and staff there. We immediately went into treatment, which was Lupron, chemo, and got that under control. Went into radiation as soon as we could after that. Had to go down to MD Anderson every morning with a full bladder in traffic, trying to time when I could go to the bathroom and when I couldn't, because they wanted me to have a full bladder. They actually checked that when I got down there, so I had to be. So went through that process. Really, the drugs and the stuff they gave me, I probably was about as good as you could be on those things during all these treatments, and just continued to get my PSA to come down and down until finally it was zero. We stayed on those drugs. And then my doctor said, hey, let's take a break. Took a break for about a year from not taking any of the drugs. Went and got a scan during that time. That scan was actually when COVID really hit there, right around spring break, when COVID was at its real beginning. And they saw a spot on my prostate. We went back, got a PSMA, and it showed that spot did have some cancer in it. Went back on to the drugs and have been able to get it under control now. But now I'm at the stage of trying to decide if I want to remove my prostate, you know, or not. You know, backing up a little bit, you know, the shock of knowing that I was diagnosed with this was brutal. But the hardest part of all that was the stages of having to tell my family about this, my kids, and it was probably, I would say for sure, the most anxiety I'd ever had in my life leading up to trying to tell them. We were doing graduation parties for my middle daughter, and my oldest daughter was in town, and she heard us over talk about a question that one of the doctors had, and we had planned on getting everybody together that night and telling everybody at the same time. But since she overheard us, she said, hey, Dad, I want to know what you're talking about. And so I stopped the car and pulled over and turned around and said, well, Dad's got cancer and got prostate cancer, and we're here to fight it. And we had an amazing conversation with her. And she said, well, you need to individually go and talk to to your two other kids, not have us all together. And that had a lot of wisdom in it. It was a nice time in a weird way with my kids to have that moment and talk to them. My youngest, who's my son, was 14 at the time. I was very anxious about telling him, because he the only one that was going to be at home. He was also only 14 years old, and he stood up and gave me a big hug and said, "Dad, you're going to beat this. And you're a strong guy." And it was just a very uplifting time, and just a time I reflect on a lot, actually, to the strength that he had and how he was able to pour into me during that time period. And so, yeah, we've been on an amazing path, had huge support from friends, huge support from our church, just always pouring into me, always praying for me, always asking me how they can help. It was a concept I really didn't understand. I didn't really understand how, when you've been self-employed like I have, when you've kind of done most of your things on your own, how important the support group and family and friends are. And that has been the big reveal, I would say, during all of this, is how we all need each other. We all need to love each other and share moments and share times and be vulnerable with each other. And it's been a really amazing.
Tom, that is an amazing story. And I want to ask, how about your wife? I did meet her once quite early on.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this has been the folks that I talk about cancer, I always, when we get in the conversation, I tell them the spouse has this way tougher than the one that's going through the cancer battle, because there's no way to control it for them. My wife has been absolutely unbelievable. She has a great group of women around her that support her. She's done all my research. She books all my appointments. She asks the majority of the questions when we're with the doctors, because she's done all the research. She's just unbelievable. We've been married now for 26 years. Can't imagine life without her before this, and truly can't imagine life now without her. Plenty of days of worry, plenty of days of knowing, you know, of anticipating what's in the future. But boy, what a rock.
That's a beautiful story. And you know, you open up the newspaper, and I feel if I had come from another planet and was trying to see what these earthlings were like, I'd open up the newspaper and say, "Oh my gosh, who would want to live on this planet? Everybody's at war, at this, at that." Mm-hmm. And to hear your story and how much support your family, your church, your friends, Ron, whom you contacted,
yes,
you know, brought to you, really shows us that humans are really good beings.
It's just, you know, it's funny, because it wasn't really something I knew. I had a lot of nice people around me, and I've always had some amazing friends. But until this, I never realized the strength of that. The strength of all these friendships. And you take Ron for an example. Ron checks on me every couple of weeks, and just doesn't, it's not something he has to do, but I mean, he cares. And it's the same with so many other people that just are constantly texting me, calling me. At first it was a little annoying, because I'm a strong guy and I don't need people thinking that I'm weak, right? And that's just a lie. I mean, that was a lie I was telling myself. And to embrace that now is absolutely incredible. You know, it's love is an easy word to just bounce around and say this and that, but the power of loving other people is life-changing.
You know, Tom, I feel like there's a real strength in being able to ask for help and being able to other people to help you. You know, you think you're strong by doing everything yourself and, you know, keeping your emotions bottled up. But I think talking to people and admitting that you need help and admitting that this is tough, I think that's a whole different level of strength that you don't realize you have.
100%.
And it's a special one that we're not really trained to have.
Right.
To have. So it reminds me of a time when my kids were young and I went to see a man giving a talk about families and raising families and so on. And his son, his oldest child, had been killed by a drunk driver when he was a senior in high school. And, you know, that's just once you have children, I mean, you anticipate before that must be terrible. But once you have children, just, you know, banish the thought. It's just so hard to think of. And so he said they're friends started a support group. His wife had a support group of her friends, and he had a support group with some of his friends. And he said, me and the guys met about twice. And now it's 7 years later and the women are still meeting. So he really pointed out how important it is for men to reach out to men, for men to be a resource to other men.
You know, let me tell you, and we didn't, I had mentioned this before, but, you know, I probably, I'm going to say at least probably 15 years ago, was at a meeting at church, and they talked about how important it was to have, you know, a men's group, just like you said. And that is not, that was not my character at the time at all. I would be fine with meeting lunch, having lunch with a guy or two now and then or whatever else, but getting a group together just wasn't my deal. And literally for the last 15 years, I've had a group of guys that ranges probably at times as small as five, but as many sometimes as 15 that meet every Friday morning. And it's massive. It's a, you know, it's because men don't let their guard down around other men. They think they don't need them. They don't think anything else. And we have this amazing group of guys. And the really other cool thing that happens in this group is once every year or so, a new guy will join, or, you know, new guys come and go, but then you'll get this one guy that'll come in and you'll realize, wow, how awesome is it that this guy's here? And you just look at it and go, it's cool. It's so cool to see how that works. And it goes back to the same thing. It's guys loving guys and understanding that they need that support. And it's huge.
Yes. Yes. I one of my cousins' wife died very unexpectedly. And I guess she was about 55 or 56. And then he has another couple of friends who've lost a spouse. And so I called him one Friday and he said, I can't talk to you right now. I'm in therapy. I said, oh, I'm really sorry. He says, no, that's what we just call our group. We're a bunch of guys. We get together over at my house. We drink beer and this is our, and I thought, well, he's not a cousin that I would ever have guessed would have used the word therapy at all.
Right.
A group of his friends. That was great. We're going to break a moment for station identification. Well, yes, indeedy. It is time for station identification. I don't want to miss telling all of you that this is Mary Edgerton, and you are enjoying my guest storytellers, Tom Hargrove and Catherine Rappold, on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT, Houston's community station, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. We are also found online at kpft.org. I know I like to mention the space station as some place where you can listen to KPFT. Well, the truth is, they get the internet at the space station, so they do have access to our shows. I know that from one of our storytellers. Tom, you just told us a very moving, wonderful, and emotional story where you shared some really raw emotions with us, and I thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're a banker, and I know that you've also been diagnosed with cancer. Can you tell us your story?
Yeah, absolutely. First, Barry, thanks so much for having me. Really happy to share my story. And Tom, your story is really moving. You know, I love hearing about your family and how everyone really rallied behind you. And yeah, so like Tom, I also have a personal history with cancer, but everyone's cancer story is different. I was diagnosed with breast cancer last year during the pandemic at age 27, which is a little bit younger than the average age of which I believe is 62, 64.
Wow.
So my stepmom was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in 2016. She went into remission and then a year later it had metastasized. And she's still here fighting and she's in a clinical trial and she's doing really great. And I'm so proud of her and everything that she's had to go through over the last couple of years. And because of her and having her in my life, I've always taken my breast health very seriously because I've seen what can happen when when something goes untreated for so long. So at the beginning of 2021, I was doing my monthly self-exam and I found a lump. And, you know, you go to your OBGYN, they tell you to do your self-exam every month. No one in their 20s actually does it, but I'm really grateful that I did do it. You know, still, I was 27, so cancer didn't actually seem like a possibility. You know, I thought maybe it was a cyst, maybe it was a fibroid. These things are really common for people in my age group. But because I've watched my stepmom go through everything, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't something serious. So I called up my OBGYN next week. I think I found the lump on a Friday. I called my OBGYN on a Monday, and the next day I was in her office. I had an ultrasound, I got a biopsy done, and really at this point, no one seemed all that concerned. You know, we thought it was a cyst, we thought it was something benign. So I was really irritated that I was going to have to make another day of work to go get it removed. That was my concern at this point, taking a few days off of work, and I realized how wrong I was. So a week after my biopsy, I got that phone call with those three words that nobody ever wants to hear. Cancer. The rest of the phone call was a blur. I don't remember a single thing that my doctor said, but I have a whole page of notes that I had typed up while she was talking. I remember hanging up the phone and frantically calling my mom, calling my stepmom, calling my boss because it was the middle of a work day. I was about to go on a bachelorette trip with some friends the next morning. So I had to call and cancel. I had to cancel my flight. We had to rearrange the hotel rooms. And really that whole day that I got diagnosed with cancer, I couldn't stop moving and doing something. I was sending off emails for hours because my mind was going in overdrive. And later that night, I finally was able to sit down and realize, oh gosh, I have cancer.
Yeah.
4 days later, I was at MD Anderson. It was about three straight weeks of tests and scans and appointments to figure out the action plan. You know, I thought you have an oncologist and you see your oncologist and you get your treatment plan. But that's not how it works. You have a medical oncologist, a surgical oncologist, a radiation oncologist, a plastic surgeon. You meet with a geneticist. I saw a psychiatrist. I also saw a therapist. You know, it's one doctor after another, and you don't realize how many different appointments and tests and doctors you'll have to see. And another thing I didn't realize, or I guess I didn't know before having cancer, is that it's often on the patient to make their treatment decisions. You know, I thought my oncologist would say, this is what we need to do to get rid of the cancer, and we'll just move forward with that. But really, they gave me multiple different options. They said, you can do a lumpectomy with radiation. You can do a mastectomy. We might be able to go direct to implants, but then if you need radiation, we won't be able to do that. So would you rather go with an expander for a temporary implant and then move to a permanent one? And these are all terms that I vaguely heard because of my stepmom, but I don't know what any of this means. I don't know the long-term side effects, the long-term impacts of going through all these treatment decisions, and I still need to make them. And, you know, I'm sitting there alone trying to decide, do I want to get my breasts amputated at age 27? Do I want to have radiation on my chest wall, which might mean heart and lung problems in the future? You know, do I want to go through certain treatment options? Because as Tom knows, no treatment is good, but it's really choosing the lesser of all of these evils. You know, what permanent side effects do you want to live with for the rest of your life? Yeah. And you know, breast cancer at 27 is very different than breast cancer in your 60s. So my first week there, I had to meet with a fertility specialist to talk about freezing my eggs because chemo will destroy any remaining eggs that you have. So a lot of women will freeze their eggs before going through chemo. And at this point, we didn't even know if I would need chemo because we weren't going to know until after we got my lymph node pathology after my surgery. So, you know, I'm trying to make decisions on freezing my eggs when I don't even know if it'll be necessary. And that's a $20,000 procedure that I wasn't sure if I would need to do or not. And wow. You know, the next day I go meet with my oncologist and she's talking about putting me into a medical menopause for 10 years. So for all of you listening, a lot of breast cancers are what's called hormone positive. And that means your tumor has receptors on them that basically help them grow the more estrogen and progesterone you have in your body. So one of the things they do is give you a shot or a pill that you can take that'll help put you into menopause to reduce the amount of those hormones in your body. But being 27, I've always dreamed of having a family, having kids. You don't plan to have to freeze your eggs and go into menopause at age 27. Okay. And, you know, some of the treatments they use for young women are different than what they have for older women. So a lot of the studies are on postmenopausal women, but how does a forced menopause differ from a natural menopause? And, you know, not to sound shallow, but I'm also at an age where I care about my body and my appearance. So, you know, it's, do I want to have my breasts amputated? Do I want to gain 20 pounds, which I've heard happens when you go into menopause? You know, am I going to have joint pain and arthritis and osteoporosis? You know, will I be able to do all of these things that I used to do? Because my body is that of a 65-year-old woman, not a 27-year-old woman. And it was really tough to go, you know, hear all of these options and only have 3 weeks to make a decision on how I want the rest of my life to look. You know, I ultimately decided on getting a double mastectomy. Only one side was necessary, but I wanted to do the other side prophylactically. I didn't want to ever risk developing another breast cancer in my good breast. I thought the one cancer was enough. It was terrifying. And, you know, when you keep your breast, it's a lifetime every 6 months of MRIs, ultrasounds, and mammograms. And I've heard from a lot of women that that creates a lot of anxiety. So it was the hardest decision that I've ever had to make, but I don't regret it for a second because I don't have that extra level of anxiety of, is another cancer going to show up in here? During my mastectomy, I also had part of my right pec removed. My tumor was pressed up against the chest wall, so they had to surgically remove some of the muscle around it. But I'm getting stronger. I can do 2 push-ups now, and I lift weights with 5 pounds. I was just at 3 pounds, but I'm up to 5 recently. So every day I get a little bit stronger. They also removed a couple of lymph nodes from my right side. And Tom, I'm not sure if you know this, but when you have your lymph nodes removed, you can have lymphedema. So that can lead to swelling. Limbs. So, you know, constantly worried about the tiniest little pinprick on my arm can trigger, you know, permanent swelling in my arm. So really just being very cautious about that. And actually during the lymph node removal, the surgeon nicked my axillary vein, which is the vein in my right armpit. And I ended up needing infusions and emergency cardiothoracic surgery. And obviously, wow. Any of this at the time, but you know, I sit there thinking of my poor mom who, you know, thought my 5-hour surgery was supposed to be over and it ended up taking 8 hours. You know, wow. She was probably terrified, wondering if I'm okay, why is the surgery taking so long? And now I think back, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I filled out my will and my, you know, resuscitation forms and all of these advanced directives that you don't think you need to worry about at age 27. I'm glad that MD Anderson sat down with me and helped me fill out all these forms to make sure that if something does happen, my family would know what I want to do with me and, you know, what I want to happen with my possessions. You know, if my family members fighting over who gets my cats if I die, you know, I'm glad we had those conversations ahead of time. It was really isolating going through cancer diagnosis and treatment during the pandemic. MD Anderson didn't allow any visitors at this point last year. So I had to go to every single test, scan, appointment entirely by myself. And for my mastectomy, my dad dropped me off at the hospital at 5 a.m. and my mom came and picked me up the next night. She wasn't even allowed to come. She just pulled up in the front and they wheeled me out to the front.
As a dad, I can't even imagine that. I can't even have a dad of 2 daughters. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I remember getting out of the car and I'm tearing up a little bit, but getting out of my dad's car and he just held on to me so tight. You know, it's dropping off someone at the hospital, not knowing if you'll get to see them again is really hard. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell it was a hard day for my dad. It was a hard day for all of us.
Yeah. You're going to be such, you already are. I mean, such a stronger person from going through this and so confident. I mean, I want you to just know that, I mean, you go through this, girl, you can do anything. I mean, you know, and that's not just words, that is real. And I mean, you know, to be able to do that and sit here and talk like you do and, but people can't see because we're on the radio. I can see you with the smile on your face and be able to talk about it and share about it. You're one strong lady.
Thank you. You know, I got cold last week and it felt like nothing. So cancer, everything into perspective.
Whoopee.
I know. Yeah, I can handle the common cold now.
Yeah.
So I think we really forget or don't think about what the pandemic meant for all patients, you know, avoiding the hospital or not being allowed to have family members in. So how was your support system?
My support system at home was fantastic. So, you know, going to any post-op appointments, my mom would drop me off and wait in the parking garage or run to a Starbucks nearby to sit and get coffee. You know, I always had someone with me when I needed help, you know, whether it was friends, family, you know, my brother, he and I are really close. And, you know, he and his fiance would come babysit me for a little bit if my mom needed a break. My neighbors across the street babysat me for one night when my mom needed a break from helping me out too. You know, as Tom mentioned, it's really hard for the people that love you, and caregiver burnout is very real. So I was grateful that I had other people to step in and give my mom a break. But, you know, it wasn't always easy. Not everyone was there to support me. I had actually been dating someone for almost a year at this point. And he is a doctor, actually. So when I was first diagnosed, he was really supportive, helped me read through all of the documents, all the papers, figure out, you know, what my diagnosis means. He talked me through some of the process of going through at MD Anderson because he works at MD Anderson part time. So he really gave a lot of guidance for that first week. And then, you know, a week later, he broke up with me because he realized the cancer was too hard for him to handle. And 27 years old, I thought I was getting to the point of maybe picking out engagement rings, not, you know, picking out what kind of cancer treatment I want. So my life really got derailed. And then someone who I thought would be one of my biggest rocks, one of my biggest supporters, left. And that completely caught me off guard. And I would say in some ways that was even harder than having the cancer and going through the cancer treatment. You know, when you're going through treatment and making these decisions, you're just in go, go, go mode. And, you know, you're constantly trying to figure out a plan and what can you do next. And it's just one thing after the other. But ending a relationship that you think might result in marriage, you just have, all you can do is sit there and think, you know, I'm sitting at these appointments by myself. And I think this person who I thought I was going to marry should be sitting here with me. And, you know, and he actually, since he is a doctor, he is allowed into MD Anderson. So he could have sat there next to me, but he chose not to. And it really helped put into perspective of, you know, the people that are supposed to be in your life are going to be there every step of the way and help out. And I always say the trash took itself out.
Yep, trash took itself out. The cream rises to the crop, to the top. You're without a doubt in my mind, you're going to find an amazing man, and because he's going to know where he's going to walk alongside you with, and this on this road you're on, and I'm actually really really thankful that it happened when it did for you, and it didn't. It didn't drag on, or it didn't just happen. And all of a sudden you realize, you know, there's someone that just can't handle this kind of stuff, because you definitely don't need that.
Yeah. I'm grateful that it happened early on. And you know, I'm glad I've met people like Tom who have these families and relationships that I can look up to. You know, I have a lot of self-respect and I don't want to settle less than what Tom and his wife have. He had a rock who was there every step of the way. And I know I'll have someone like that in the future. And I'm glad that this person that I was with is no longer in my life.
Next time, when someone's about to give you a ring, they get to come and chat with me first.
Oh, I'll add you to my list of dads. Yes. Give him the talking to.
This could be as long or as short as you want, but it can't hurt to have a couple of interviews with other people.
Yeah, I'll have him make his rounds. You can maybe take him for a stroll around MD Anderson and see if he can handle it.
100%.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think, Tom, you're exactly right that it was, it's not what you, the way you wanted things to go, but it's better to know early on if your rock is your rock or if it's a disintegrating sandstone, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, we all need a rock here and there. you know, I had a premature baby, and she's fine now. She's an engineer, but you know, I really carried a lot of that burden by myself, and I wanted a rock. And so it's very important as you're going through those love stages to also either yourself or have somebody help you consider, you know, is this person going to be able to be a rock for me?
Because
you guys have faced this early. A lot of people face a cancer diagnosis, but for you guys, I have to say the two of you, both incredibly strong. I mean, you're both very young to have the kinds of diseases that you have. And it's, I thank you so much for sharing.
100%. One thing I always say is that I'll never be grateful that I had cancer, but I'll always be grateful for the people that it brought into my life. You know, you and Tom, I never would have met either of you if I hadn't gone through this. And I will forever be grateful that y'all are going to be part of my life forever.
We will be. And I have to tell you, before the pandemic, I always took my guests out to dinner prior to the show because it was, it aired live. And so we're going to have that dinner.
100%.
It's funny.
Hey, it's funny that you say that too, because this morning I was sitting there chatting with my wife and I said how excited I was after our first meeting and how I thought it was just really amazing. And I said, you know, the Lord doesn't put anybody in my life as an accident. Mm-hmm. He puts them in there for a reason. And Mary was very obvious why he put her in my life. And now you're very obvious why he's put you in my life. And it's really, 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 it's really cool.
It is, definitely. So do you have any advice for people?
My advice, really, it's specifically for young women, but it can apply to anyone. Know your body and stand up for yourself if you feel like doctors aren't listening to you. I was really fortunate that every medical professional that I met trusted me. No one gets breast cancer at 27. So, you know, the medical advice should have been wait a couple of months, see if your lump changes with your menstrual cycle. But instead, my doctor ordered an ultrasound right away because she knew it would give me peace of mind. And, you know, you have to know your body and you need to ask for what you want, because if she hadn't ordered the ultrasound, I would have had to keep pressing for it. And you know, a couple of months ago, I found a lump in my armpit and my oncologist immediately ordered another ultrasound. And she said, this doesn't feel like anything, but we're going to check just to make sure. You know, it's better to be safe than sorry and to really stand up for yourself and own your health, because you know your body better than anyone else. And if you think something is wrong, it's absolutely worth looking into. And don't take no for an answer.
Don't take no for an answer. That's so important. You know, I look at these biopsies and of scars, and five might go by and it's scar tissue. And then one comes by and it's a recurrence. And I say, that's why we're doing this. That's why we're doing these biopsies, because it's so important to catch that early. Y'all are both really beautiful people, and it's been wonderful having you in my life.
Yeah. Mary, all that from day one, after I hung up the phone with Mary at our house, we call Mary my angel. that everybody that's around me, everybody knows when I say my angel, that's Mary, because, and I think that's one of the things that's really cool too, about life. You know, a lot of times we forget, especially I think men forget that little things are important. And, you know, when I first talked to Mary and she first helped me out, I'm not going to say it was a little thing, but it wasn't like it was. I mean, I wasn't asking her to get on a plane and fly to the other side of the country and do this and do that. I was asking her to help me with a skill set that she had, and she did it, and she didn't have to do it. And, you know, and it changed my life. And so and it made me more, it made me want to be angels to other people.
That's it. Keep giving it on.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works.
You know, I'm lucky that I know something about diseases and I know how to navigate the medical system. Yeah. And as a pathologist, I don't really see patients. So it really is a joy for me to have an interaction with a patient. And it's not as though I'm doing CPR or doing surgery. I'm just beginning to explain to you. So the words come more slowly what right. they mean comes more slowly. And, you know, if you have a question about what something meant, that you can call me. So, yeah, I have a great group of friends out there.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Mary, I would say that the emotional side of cancer is equally, if not more important than the physical side of treatment. You know, I had all of my oncologists and surgeons, but my psychiatrist and my therapist were just as important, because your mental health needs to be a priority as well. And I think a lot of people neglect that. And not just for cancer, for any hardships that you may go through with life, it's important to focus on mental health. And one of the things that I'm grateful of is every single medical professional I've met through MD Anderson and otherwise has always made a point to ask how I'm doing. And even the ones that don't see patients all that often, we know that you care about how we're doing as a person. You know, hearing you talk about how every fifth, you know, slide that you look at for pathology is a recurrence, just voice, I can tell that you know that these are people and that you care about them as people, not just treating their cancer. You know, you're treating them as people.
Thank you. Yeah, they are my patients. Mm-hmm. Oh, so I want to thank you all for having been on the show tonight. We have a special treat, some music that Catherine chose for us to listen to on the way out. And it's something that everybody should listen to and take to heart, but most of all for our whole community of listeners. Yeah. I really thank y'all for sharing two very personal stories.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary.
Yes. And as we like to say, it's never too late to live happily ever after.
That's true. True. Every day. Yeah. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah. Thank you. I want to add as an epilogue that although I was able to meet Tom in person before the pandemic, I had never met Catherine in person, and neither Tom nor Catherine had met each other. The day before we recorded the show was the first time that the three of us were able to meet together on Zoom. As you heard, there was so much warmth and connection in their stories. It was remarkable to me. And the three of us plan to meet in person in the next month. Listening to their stories, even at a distance, demonstrated for me the importance of storytelling to connect us as human beings. As you heard, Tom is joining Catherine's Father Brigade as she steps into her future and her partner choices, and she has seen in Tom's family the strength and devotion that should be the foundation of our loving relationships. For me, that's a beautiful integration of their two stories. I also want to add, as a cancer doctor, that several things we heard are very important. One is to know your body and to remember that you are in charge of it. This is your most precious possession. Take care of it as such. Keep up with your screening and preventive health measures. Tell your doctor how you feel and make sure your voice is heard. It sounds like a trite statement, but it is the truth. Your body is your life. And remember to reach out to your loved ones in need, to your friends, and to your fellow humans. The warmth of support is never ending. As I mentioned before, Larry Thompson will be your host next week with more tellers and new journeys. But don't leave. Stay tuned into KPFT, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Let this be a balm for your heart. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day of your day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute whiz by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. As you know, and as I said before, it's never too late to live happily ever after. And before I say peace, I am so excited to bring this piece of music to you that Catherine chose. as something uplifting in the face of everything that she and Tom have been had to go through. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.
Sun, I say it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo-doo. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling, the smile's returning to the faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, airing Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. live. I'm so looking forward to a special virtual event for KPFT listeners this Thursday, April 14th at 7 p.m. I hope you can join us for my talk. I'll be discussing vital issues of the day, war and peace, the climate catastrophe, and so much more. I'll also be joined by KPFT's general manager, Dr. Robert Franklin. To register for the event or for more information, go to kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org. Thank you so much. See you Thursday at 7 p.m.
Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, host of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. So who is this Arnie person? Well, I delivered my first baby without the benefit of health insurance. As a young state rep, I breastfed my second kid on the floor of the legislature. I gained a reputation for talking truth to power, and in 92 became the first female nominee for governor, beating my party chairman and our five-term congressman. Today, I describe myself as a politician in recovery, but the constant in my life, my love affair with political talk. Tune into The Attitude with Arnie Arneson Monday mornings at 5 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. and settle in for an edgy, eclectic hour of people, policy, and politics. The Attitude provides the facts and stories that define our lives.
listen to your favorite KPFT programs on the air at 90.1 KPFT or 90.1 FM HD2. You can also catch it on the archive, online at kpft.org, and through your favorite smart speaker device.